It's Uncovered. I'm Anthony Davis. He's Ron Filipkowski. It's Wednesday, which is why we're here. It's also the reason that Donald Trump's criminal court case does not is not in session on Wednesdays. It's to make room for this show, Uncovered. Isn't that right, Ron?
Yeah, we're his favorite show, so yeah. We wouldn't want him to miss it.
Yeah, or for the jurors to miss it. For that matter,
yes. We want to make sure the jurors watch too. Correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So we uncover the MAGA propaganda that's not covered by the mainstream media, invariably. Although they are catching on finally, but it's almost like 5-6 years too late. Let's start with the court case. We've got a lot to get through today, but let's start with the criminal court case where Donald Trump is not just having to show up, but he's also having to stay awake during. It's been very interesting hearing evidence from David Pecker, who, of course, was the owner of the National Enquirer. And so many revelations are coming out of this, to the point that actually what we thought was, you know, because of this whole, you know, election interference / hush money case, you know, people were saying that of the cases, this is not the strongest one. But actually, this David Pecker evidence is suggesting to me anyway, I don't know how you feel, that actually this is quite a serious case with some very powerful evidence against Donald Trump.
And, you know, the names that are getting thrown around by Pecker are just makes this incredibly interesting. You know, he's bringing Marco Rubio into it, Ted Cruz, even Elvis Presley. You know, there's all these celebrity names being brought up. And when you hear the details from him about this catch and kill strategy, you really see how Trump and them conspired to rig the 2016 election. And there you're seeing part of the catch and kill. That's just the tip of the iceberg.
So these are some of the covers for those people who are listening on the audio podcast. These are some of the covers of the National Enquirer. Hillary, 6 months to live. Oh, my goodness, I remember that one. Yes, everyone was like, oh, she's not going to be well enough to be president. Obama and Hillary ordered FBI to spy on Trump. Brain cancer drama, picture of Hillary, proof Obama wiretapped Trump. I mean, all this stuff, and plenty on Ted Cruz, interestingly. All this stuff was from the minds of Donald Trump and David Pecker. And David Pecker is effectively saying that, you know, this was very much, you know, Trump being the executive producer of these types of stories.
Right. You know, basically what he testified to, and people ask, well, what does this have an impact? How many people read the National Enquirer? First, a lot. But second, the key is these covers. These covers are on grocery stands. You know, as you're going through the checkout line, people are seeing these covers. They're in convenience stores. They're in gas stations. So even though people might not buy the National Enquirer or read them, they're actually able to go in, you know, to see the cover and at least get the screaming headline of the story. And what you're finding out here is what we found out is that this whole strategy was cooked up by Trump and his campaign, and by Michael Cohen, who is part of it. And we can't absolve Michael Cohen in this. You know, I mean, Michael Cohen has come clean and all that, but he was very instrumental and very much involved in this. And the strategy was that they reached out to Pecker and there was two parts to this. Number one is they said Pecker ran positive stories, pumping, fabricating positive stuff about Trump. So that was the other side of this coin. But then they would bring him little nuggets of dirt that they would find on social media, right-wing social media, whatever, these conspiracy theories, Alex Jones-type conspiracy theories, bring them to Pecker, and then he would, he would embellish them. He would jazz them up. He would sensationalize them and put them out. And he did it about Hillary Clinton. He did it about Marco Rubio. He did it about Ben Carson, Ted Cruz, one right after the other. And they were all made up. They were all fiction. And it was all being orchestrated by Donald Trump.
So just to explain to people how that connects to the charges in this case, how are they going to make that connection?
How it connects is the third part, which is the kill part. So the catch and kill, they had a kill part. So that's what really led to the criminal charges. So there's three parts. One, they're running positive stories about Trump. Two, they're running these fake negative stories about his opponents. And three, they're killing stories that can really hurt him that are legit. In other words, people that are what they were told is Pecker would say that he runs the Enquirer. So a lot of people would come to him with stories, limo drivers, people who work in lawyers' offices, anybody who has access to famous people would come and bring him stories about Trump. And he would contact Michael Cohen whenever these people would come in and say, look, this person's making these allegations. They seem pretty wild. What should we do? And they would talk about it. And they would basically buy these people off. Now, Trump can't do that legally. He can't, you know, a political campaign can't use campaign funds and go buy off, use hush money to buy off a negative story. So Pecker did it for them. Pecker was the one who would give a source money, and he would get exclusive rights to the story until after the election. And he would just buy the story and then kill it and suppress it. And so what led to the criminal charges is the fact that for in the Stormy Daniels case, they had to come up, and in the Karen McDougal case, they had to come up with big chunks of change. And in the case of Stormy Daniels, Michael Cohen had to lay out the 130 grand, which is quite a bit. He had to take out a home equity loan to cover it. And then Trump is having to pay him back. And Michael wanted to be reimbursed in full, one check for $130,000 from Trump Org. Trump didn't want to do it that way because he wanted to cover his tracks. So he was dribbling out payments to him, you know, $10,000 here, $20,000 here, and making it look like legal fees and cooking the books, making it look like these were legal fees. And so that's where the crime comes in.
And this is Trump's mindset, isn't it? That everything he does, whether it be, you know, eating classified documents or flushing them down the toilet, you know, we heard all of that stuff from the White House, or paying Michael Cohen in chunks, it is a kind of natural desire to act in a criminal fashion. Like, he doesn't know any other way. He spent his whole life covering his tracks and eating evidence, right?
Absolutely. I mean, we heard in the White House how they would destroy documents without going through the proper channels. What was in those documents, we don't know. Yes, this is Trump's MO, and surrounding himself with shady people.
Yeah.
I mean, let's face it, like, he grabbed Michael Cohen, I mean, who was very willing to go along with all of this stuff. He finds people that, like Alina Habal right now, he finds people that are willing to go along with the madness and to do his bidding. And Rudy, you know, we can give example after example, people that are willing to put their law licenses and their reputation and light it on fire. Trump is very good at identifying those people and bringing them into his fold.
The best example of this is Alan Weisselberg, isn't it?
Sure.
Because of course, has pleaded guilty. He was the chief financial officer at the Trump Organization, and he has now pled guilty twice, right?
Right. And so yes, what this trial is doing is peeling back the layers of the onion. We are seeing the inner workings behind the scenes of how Trump manipulates and rigs elections by putting out negative stuff, using fraud, planting fake stuff. You know, he tried to rig the 2020 election. He's trying to rig this election the same way. And in fact, the whole time he's crying that the election is being rigged against him. When we find out he is the one who's rigging elections.
Well, ironically, the Supreme Court just hearing this case out of Texas, where they're trying to ban mail-in voting. I mean, if that's not voter suppression, I don't know what is. And this is part of the bigger picture. And it's ironic that Trump is, you know, claiming this is election interference, when this is exactly why he's in court at the moment. Just explain to me, with David Pecker, he's a very charismatic guy, apparently got a whole bunch of laughs in court. You know, he's like a stand-up comedian on the stand there. I wonder if he took the mic out of its stand and put the stand behind him and then started giving evidence. Is he doing this because he's telling the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, or does he have a personal vendetta against Donald Trump? Is this political, or is he just, you know, having to do his due diligence?
I think he has no vendetta whatsoever against Trump. I think he still likes Trump. I think he's protecting Trump, actually. I think what he's doing here is he's telling the truth about what he's asked. Okay, so I think his answers have been 100% truthful. However, I think in the case of David Pecker, this is the tip of the iceberg. I think there's a lot more that Pecker knows that Trump did, including going back to the the 80s and the 90s is, you know, not just pertaining to this election, but Trump used Pecker to settle scores and to promote him and settle scores against his enemies for years. But none of that stuff is coming into the trial because it's really not relevant to the criminal charge. See, so Pecker knows a whole lot more dirt and terrible things about Trump that are not coming in during this trial because they're not relevant to the charges.
Just remind me, as an aside, what was that fake name that Trump used to give himself when he phoned up the newspapers trying to kind of
wasn't it John Barron? I think that's
I think it was John Barron. He, like, there's audio tape of him like putting on a voice saying
where he would call into radio shows and right. say how great Trump is. You know, the other funny thing that Pecker said, which was pretty unusual, was he said that that in 2015. So they asked who brought up the subject of women that they need to look out for women, because that's what he said. We need to look out for women coming forward claiming that they slept with Trump. And they asked, well, why did you bring up specifically women? And he said, well, Trump at that time, it was well known that he was dating a lot of beautiful women. Well, he had been married to Melania for 10 years at that point. He married Melania in 2005. This conversation about him saying, he said Trump was one of the most eligible bachelors in New York. This is a guy who had been married for 10 years at the time. He was almost never a bachelor. He went from one marriage to the next to the next. There was small windows of time where he was single, but most of the time Trump's been married. So when he's talking about him dating lots of beautiful women, he's talking about him dating him while he was married to Melania.
And he has no idea how to date women, aside from Melania. I mean, I urge people to watch the Stormy Daniels documentary that's on Peacock, because it really, you know, and I've brought this up a few times, and I keep saying it. It seems like nobody who had any kind of sexual interaction with Donald Trump really enjoyed themselves. You know, it's like he just does not know how to communicate with women, and he might love women and think that they're beautiful. But that's kind of where it ends. You know, he really does see them as you know, he objectifies them rather than wanting to actually connect with them in any deeper way.
But I think that that's why Karen McDougal's testimony is going to be even more devastating than Stormy's.
Yes.
Because I think Stormy's story is very well known and she had limited interaction with him. But Karen is a whole different story. She's the Playboy model who dated Trump for a solid year, including the entire time Melania was pregnant. And I don't know a whole lot about the details of her story, but I believe that the situation is she actually genuinely liked Trump and maybe even thought, I don't know, maybe even thought Trump would leave Melania for her. That's a possibility. And so I think that what is going to come out, whereas with Stormy, it's just going to be, oh, you know, he hooked up with a porn star and maybe he forced himself on her. Okay, you know, everybody knows pretty much that story for the most part, but the Karen McDougal story, we don't know all the details on that. And I think that she is going to paint a devastating picture of Donald Trump, especially if she gets into him talking about going to lengths to cover it up from Melania. You know,
this is why this case is going to have so many interesting twists and turns. We weren't expecting the revelations that David Pecker came out with that he presented in such a charismatic fashion. I think you're right. It's going to be the same with Karen McDougal, and it will give us all more food for thought, and hopefully the jury as well. Let's talk about the gag order now, because Donald Trump is playing with fire, isn't he? And just bring us up to date with that, and then I'll show this clip of him criticizing it in the hallways.
Sure. So basically, we were all wondering what is going to be his defense to this. You know, what is his lawyers going to argue as to why he didn't violate? And basically, they presented two arguments. One is, these people that Trump is talking about, they started it. Specifically, Michael Cohen and Stormy Daniels are his main targets. And what he's saying is, look, Cohen keeps attacking me on podcasts, on Twitter, and I'm just responding to his attacks. So the judge was like, ready for that argument. I think he anticipated it because he's like, okay, let's break this down. Let's take each and every post that the state is alleging he directed at Michael Cohen. You show me the Michael Cohen post that went before that, that he was responding to, and they couldn't do it. Everything that they came up with was Cohen responding to Trump. So this was not a situation like they argued that, you know, Trump is just responding to attacks by Cohen. No, yeah. It was the other way around. It was Cohen responding to attacks from Trump. So that went absolutely nowhere. And the second part was, is it a violation for Trump to post articles from other people or things from other people attacking the witnesses and the jurors? In other words, what he's saying is, these aren't my words. I'm just reposting other people.
Right. These are the retweets and the retruths.
So that one, we're not really sure how Mershon's going to rule on that. So he reserved ruling. I expect that we're going to get a ruling from him as soon as we walk into court, as soon as they go walk into court tomorrow morning. I expect he's going to rule. Now the DA is being very lenient here. That's the other part of this, is they're only asking for $1,000 fine times 10. And they're asking for the judge to tell him the next time he does this, he's going to jail. I mean, that's pretty lenient, because Trump has already received many warnings before and always ignores the warnings. I mean, he violated the gag order 5 minutes after he walked out of court again.
But he's doing it because he can. And he's doing it because he has such little power now that this is a way to exert power and to give the impression that he's all powerful. And he's really only playing to his base, isn't he? I mean, this is really what it's for.
But he's playing with fire. And I think he's basically, he thinks Mershon will not dare put him in jail. Yeah. But what we know is that the marshals and the Secret Service and court personnel were already making preparations for the fact that he could have gone to jail yesterday. They were preparing for that. So we've talked about this before. It's a major thing for a judge, despite everything that Trump is doing, to put a former president of the United States in jail. It's going to result in a national firestorm. It'll be the biggest story in the world. So it's a huge move. So I think that's why the DA is trying to bend over backwards here and show the public and the whole world, we are doing everything we can to try and, this guy's going to put himself in jail. We're not going to put him in jail. He's going to put himself in jail. And we tried to warn him, but he wouldn't listen.
I just want to remind our viewers that it is not unusual in Europe to put leaders in jail.
No.
Italy, Silvio Berlusconi, France, Nicolas Sarkozy.
Yep. Sure.
I mean, the whole point is that they should be held to the same legal standard as everybody else. And it only seems to be American exceptionalism that has kind of elevated the office of president. You know, he is still a representative. He's still, or a former representative, he's still working for the people. And the idea, you know, people here are like, oh, we're a republic, you know, we don't want to have a monarchy. And it's like, well, why are you treating this guy like a king? Mm. You know, it doesn't really make sense to me. Let me play the clip of him complaining about the gag order, and we can see what we think of this.
But you can believe he's going to talk a great deal about how he feels about all of this.
The gag order is totally unconstitutional. Can't even allow articles to be put in. As an example, these are articles that were over the last day and a half. They're very good articles. They say the case is a sham and it shouldn't even be tried. It shouldn't have been submitted. And I don't even know if you're allowed to put them in. We have a gag order.
Let me just firstly react by saying that when he says it's totally unconstitutional, where did the founding fathers in the Constitution write that the president was likely to have a gag order in a criminal court because he kept violating his role and criticizing these people giving evidence? It's insane that he says that. And the second thing we have to talk about is his obsession with reams of paper. You know, that he loves A4 printer paper. He loves a staple in a corner. I think maybe the staple is a feeling of strength. And you know, he did this when he first became president, and he said, I'm divesting my relationship with the Trump Organization. Do you remember they wheeled on that kind of giant cart full of reams of obviously blank paper, but he gave the impression that was all of the administration that he wasn't going to be looking at. I mean, this is just theater, all of it. It's just performative show business. And we're not buying it, are we?
He did the same thing with 60 Minutes and his healthcare plan. You know, they had the big cart with boxes. It was all blank paper.
This is
his thing. What we found out this week because of reporting by Daily Beast, I think, who broke the story. Somebody broke the story about his fluffer that he has on staff. He has somebody on staff now that he hired like 2 months ago. And her only job is to print out those articles. She's paid $105,000 a year by the campaign. So in addition to paying like hundreds of thousands of dollars a year for Melania's stylist and Melania's hairdresser, I think they're over $400,000 of campaign funds to Melania, who has not done a single campaign event. Now they're spending over $100,000 of campaign funds on this woman who follows Trump around everywhere he goes, including in the courtroom.
And the golf
with
course.
A wireless printer and the golf and just constantly looks on the internet, right wing internet, for positive stories about positive poll numbers, whatever, and feeds Trump these articles. And he walks around with them all day long. And, you know, it's funny to hear some of the reporters in court. They're like, Trump is staring at some papers. It appears to be possibly the jury questionnaires, and he's writing notes. I'm like, no, I know exactly what he's doing. I posted online. He's reading those articles, and what he's doing is he crosses out parts that he doesn't like. If there's a line in the article, like the article could be 95% positive pro-Trump, but if there's like one little line in there that he doesn't like, he'll cross that out, and then he gives it back to her, and then she redacts the parts that he doesn't like. And that's what they put on True Social, is the redacted article. So when he's writing, that's what he's doing. He's crossing out parts of these articles that he doesn't like. And he's waving them around. And it's like, these are all these experts. Well, what did he say this morning? This morning he put out a video. He's like, all these experts agree with me. And he cited Jonathan Turley, who's the Fox legal analyst.
Yeah.
He cited Tom Fitton, who's not a lawyer. And he cited Andrew McCarthy, who works for the right-wing National Review. Those are his legal experts. And Alan Dershowitz.
It's very interesting that, you know, we're starting to get a glimpse of how he works. And I can only imagine that this is what he did when he was in the White House.
Right.
People would bring him articles with his name in and a staple in the corner. And he would get his Sharpie and he would redact and he would, you know, because... He didn't really president, did he? He pretended to be the president, like he was still on the Apprentice pretending to fire people. And I really think that just, you know, the psychology of this guy, the insecurity, the narcissistic personality disorder, he can't go for 5 minutes talking about anything that doesn't involve him. And exactly. So I really had a thought when I saw him, you know, the court sketches and everything else of him. I just thought, wow, that's basically the Resolute desk, isn't it? Like, that's all he did, was just stay home and cross stuff out that he didn't like.
And watch TV and play on and tweet, right?
Right.
So
people want this guy back.
That's what he did. That's what he did, and signed stuff. And he loves the pomp and circumstance. We just heard that from a great video that went viral from the president of the National Construction Union. Construction Trades Union. And that's what he talked about. He said, look, I've known Trump since the 80s, going way back. They say he just likes the pomp and circumstance of the office. He likes people to pump him up. He likes to take credit for things. And, you know, he likes the photo ops and the ceremonies and everybody saluting him. That's what Trump is all about.
Here's another clip of him waving reams of paper. I don't know who's benefiting out of this. I guess, you know, I don't know, Target. Well, I don't know where he's going to buy his paper, but they're the only people that are doing well out of this. Here he is.
In New Hampshire. I'm supposed to be in Georgia. I'm supposed to be in North Carolina, South Carolina. I'm supposed to be in a lot of different places campaigning. But I've been here all day on a trial that really is a very unfair trial. These are all stories. This is over the last few days. From legal experts, this is Wall Street Journal editorial, but all of these are stories from legal experts saying how this is not a case. The case is ridiculous. This is another one. The case is a ridiculous Trump indictment. It's missing fraud. There is no fraud. All of these stories are stories of how, and these are done by the experts and editorials, Bragg falsified business record, and he falsifies them. He's the one. He's the fraud. But take a look at all of these are our stories. You see them here. Bragg's indictment even falls as an indictment. All of them. Bragg crosses the Rubicon, indicting Trump on that sense.
I can't even watch it. I mean, he's just a moron. Like he has nothing. He has no vocabulary. He has no intellect. He's like, you know, like the Neanderthal man chart. I mean, he's like the third one. He's the third one. He's the knuckle dragging third one in the chart. I'm sick of his voice now. I'm almost done with him.
The other part of that is the first part that he said, which is his main, you know, his main rap, which is, you know, they're keeping me from campaigning,
right.
which is preposterous, because I've documented this very, very well. Since his campaign has started 18 months ago, he has averaged less than one campaign event a week. And all he does is fly in on his jet, stop at a fast food place, give a 2-hour speech, do a photo op on the airport tarmac by his jet with cops, and leave. Yeah. That's his idea of campaigning in 2024. And he does it one day a week at most. And he's gone multiple weeks at a time doing nothing. So what did he do last Saturday when he had a day off from the trial? Nothing. What did he do Sunday? Nothing. Today is a day. They broke court early yesterday at 2:00 in the afternoon. What did he do? Nothing. What did he do today? Absolutely nothing. He's not doing any campaigning. I mean, so this trial is not preventing him from being able to campaign, but that's his claim. But it's like, well, what are you doing on the off days?
Yeah.
You're doing nothing.
But he'll have to back it up. He'll need to, the judge will want him to back it up with evidence that he has been campaigning. You know, it's a little bit like, oh, I need Passover off and I need Barron's graduation off and all this stuff. It's like, where is the evidence that that's the life you live outside of this courtroom?
Yeah.
And it just isn't there. But it's getting to the point, you know, all the more time that he spends sitting in the courtroom exposed to this stuff, and then coming out and saying these pathetic things outside is just giving, because I'm sure they play those things on Fox, just exposes him as the weak, cowardly man that he is and not this strong man that he pretends to be. Because,
that's,
you know, swooping into these campaign events and then swooping back out again, he's not campaigning. I mean, that's what Mariah Carey does when she's doing a concert.
This is why
it's not enough.
That's why I said the optics of this trial are going to hurt him as much or more than the trial itself and the evidence. The evidence is going to hurt him, but the optics, I think, is going to hurt him even more politically. The complaining every day about how cold it is, complaining about having to sit there all day, how hard that is, whining about not being, you know, falling asleep, farting, you know, all of these things, these stories that are coming out, him coming out looking all disheveled and tired. These are the things I think that are going to hurt him with voters even more maybe than the case itself.
But he's out campaigning. He's out campaigning, and I'm here in the courtroom sitting here sitting up as straight as I can all day long, because you know what? It's a very unfair situation. So we're locked up in a courtroom, but this guy's out there campaigning, if you call it a campaign. Every time he opens his mouth, he gets himself into trouble.
Yeah, he's a fine one to talk. This argument now that it's so cold in there is the reason that he's falling asleep. I mean, that's the one doing the rounds on Fox, isn't it? I saw Jesse Watters trying to push that conspiracy theory. Oh, well, you know, how you're putting an old guy in a cold room. Of course he's falling asleep.
Well, that's exactly what we want. I mean, we, because, you know, we want it to sound like Trump, when they're defending Trump, saying he's old and this is unfair that to treat an old guy like this, you know, that's perfect. I like that. That's what I want. I mean, here's the other thing. Court broke at 2 o'clock yesterday. Okay. He did nothing. He met with the former ex prime minister from like 15 years ago and of Japan at Trump Tower and gave him a key to the White House. Okay. So that's what he gave him. And that's what he did last night. And then he was up till 2 a.m. His last post on True Social was at 1:59 a.m. That's why he's falling asleep in the courtroom, because he's up till 2 a.m. ranting and raving about Alvin Bragg.
I just want to say something about Truth Social, because I was watching the post on Truth Social that he'd put with meeting the former Japanese prime minister. And, you know, Trump has 7 million followers on Truth Social. And that only got 5,000 retruths. And in fact, his rants about, you know, criticizing the judge, stuff that is explosive, that you would expect to go viral, is only getting 4,000 or 5,000 retruths and maybe 16,000 likes. You've got 7 million followers. You're only getting 16,000 likes. The numbers don't add up, Ron. Something's not right. I mean, a lot of those followers are bots, clearly.
Oh, yeah, sure. It's all fake. It's a facade. But that also shows why he had an opportunity to go back on Twitter. I mean, he can go right now on Twitter and communicate to over 80 million people that he has on Twitter. And he got massive amount of engagement. Look, when Donald Trump was on Twitter, he dominated the space. He had more engagement than anyone else on Twitter in terms of politics. But he can't do it because he's trying to get rich off Trump media stock. And so if he goes on Twitter, that's it. That's the end of Trump media. As soon as he starts posting on Twitter, that stock becomes utterly worthless.
Yeah.
So he's got this catch 22 where it would benefit him in his campaign to be on Twitter, probably, but he can't because he's trying to get rich off Trump media. So it's just unbelievable. And he's not getting anywhere near the traction with his True Social tweets. What he tries to claim is, well, my True Social tweets end up getting posted on Twitter. Not really. You know, he's posting 100 things a day over there. We might post 2 or 3 of the nuttiest, craziest ones to make him look like a fool, but that's it. So he's not getting nearly as much traction.
We have to take a quick break, but I want to come back and talk about Devin Nunes, who has suggested there's a conspiracy about the stock price. We've got some stuff with Carrie Lake, which is pretty explosive. It's all to come here on Uncovered. Have you ever wished you had a whiter and brighter smile? Well, before you visit a dentist, you should know that whitening treatments there can be expensive, and it's not just the price. You also have to book the appointment and schedule time away from work or family to sit in a dentist's office and undergo the procedure. It's a hassle. Fortunately, now you can try Smile Actives at home or anywhere, anytime. Smile Actives offers a safe and affordable alternative to those expensive whitening procedures. 97% of Smile Actives users in a clinical trial reported up to 6 shades whiter on average, all within 30 days. Simply add Smile Actives Pro Whitening Gel to your regular toothpaste. It's been formulated with PolyClean technology to boost stain removal and deliver active whitening ingredients into teeth's grooves and crannies to get better whitening. Smile Actives makes a teeth whitening gel that can simply be added to your toothbrush every time you brush your teeth. No change in your routine, no extra time, no more messy strips, trays, or lights. People will start commenting on your whiter, brighter smile in just days. Visit smileactives.com/uncovered today to receive a special buy one, get one free offer with auto delivery plus free shipping and handling. That's smileactives.com/uncovered. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details. Have you heard about Senolytics yet? It's a class of ingredients discovered less than 10 years ago, and they're being called the biggest discovery of our time for promoting healthy aging and enhancing your physical prime. Your life goals in your career and beyond require productivity. But let's be honest, the aging process is not our friend when it comes to endless energy and productivity, and that's why I use Qualia Senolytic. If someone would have told me that there was science-backed ingredients that could help me feel 15 years younger in a matter of months, I wouldn't have believed it. Then I tried Qualia Senolytic. As we age, everyone accumulates senescent cells in their body. Senescent cells cause symptoms of aging, such as aches and discomfort, slow workout recovery, sluggish mental and physical energy associated with that middle-age feeling. Also known as zombie cells, they are old and worn out and not serving a useful function for our health anymore, but they're taking up space and nutrients from our healthy cells. Much like pruning the yellowing and dead leaves off a plant, Qualia Senolytic removes those worn-out senescent cells to allow for the rest of them to thrive in the body. Resist aging at the cellular level. Try Qualia Senolytic. Go to neurohacker.com/uncovered for up to $100 off and use code uncovered at checkout for an additional 15% off. That's neurohacker.com/uncovered for an extra 15% off your purchase. Thank you, Neurohacker, for sponsoring today's episode. And you can find links to our sponsors down in the description below. It's Uncovered. I'm Anthony. He's Ron. So David Nunes, he's the guy who's kind of behind this, you know, Truth Social movement and trying to take it public. Is that right? You know, he kind of left his job in politics to do this job for Donald Trump.
Yeah, another brilliant hire by Donald Trump. Let's bring a let's bring a dairy farmer and a congressman in to run a tech company and social media company with no experience. So the stock is nosediving. And of course, who do you go to? You go to the CEO. Who's the CEO? Devin Nunes. So what's the problem? So Nunes is going on the media and media is asking, why is your stock tanking? Why is your company doing so bad? Why is Trump losing all this money? And, you know, he has cooked up this conspiracy, but we also had some revelations in these interviews about who the shareholders are and what is going on with the stock with little nuggets. He mentioned, and they'll see a little Freudian slip in the clip. He mentions foreign investors. He talks about that they have hundreds of thousands of investors around the world. And then he catches himself and he goes, in the United States. So obviously there's foreign people putting money into this when they can't donate to his campaign, so they're buying stock. And his conspiracy is that all of these people that are Trump fans, that are MAGA people, or small investors, have bought shares in this, and that is what caused the stock to go up, despite the fact that this company has no earnings and is losing money. It's really the Trump fans that have pumped up the stock. And what he's saying is the reason why it's going down is because there's big banks are short selling the stock and suppressing the value. And he also accused Biden of denigrating the stock. And what he thinks is that Biden is conspiring behind the scenes with investment bankers to take the stock, to tank the stock. That's what he's claiming as the reason why the stock. So not the fact that it has no advertisers, no earnings, you know, no losing value. Money. It's a Biden conspiracy with the big banks.
Here he is.
Look, we're here to defend our retail shareholders. Like, I don't give a damn if Wall Street doesn't want to support us. In fact, we welcome it. But we have millions of retail shareholders, or we have millions of people around the globe or in the United States. We have hundreds of thousands of retail shareholders. We don't have any institutions, zero Wall Street money. That's okay. But when you see irregular behavior occurring where it looks like our retail shareholders could be taken advantage of, which is what many of our shareholders believe, and if they call me or they contact us, we have a responsibility to reach out to the NASDAQ to say, hey, we're seeing this. We're going to get to the bottom of it if there is. If there's not, the obvious response, if you think there's nothing wrong, you say there's nothing wrong. You don't go out and basically attack me personally. You basically just say, hey, there's nothing wrong. We'll love to work with you. And that's how it should be done. So since they're making the personal attacks, if we continue to show up on these lists and it appears like there's unusual activity, you can be damn sure that this investigation will continue. And that'll include if we have to go to the Congress, if we have to take legal action, we will do whatever it takes to defend our retail investors. And what's at the heart of all of this? Chris, remember at the beginning of the week, Joe Biden mentions Truth Social and our stock price. Isn't that weird? That happened at the beginning of the week.
I saw that.
Isn't that weird, Ron? I mean, this is just more of the same, isn't it? It's like, you know, they're panicking. I mean, clearly this stock is going to crash and burn. And there's going to be a lot of very desperate shareholders, especially the base, people who don't have the money to invest in this kind of thing, who thought that they were onto a winner. And they're gonna be knocking on doors.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many little nuggets in there. You heard him say around the globe and then caught himself.
Yeah.
Said Merrick, but the other thing he said is that they're calling him. Shareholders are calling him. So obviously they're getting a lot of complaints from the MAGA fans about the stock tanking, and they're calling Trump Media, the CEO, Devin Nunes, complaining about it. So he's fielding all those calls. The other thing he talked about is personal attacks. That's also in that state. There's so much in there that you can parse out. But what that was a Wall Street writer who covers NASDAQ, who's pretty well-known and well-respected, wrote a big column trashing Devin Nunes and saying he's totally incompetent and he doesn't know what he's doing. So that's what he's talking about. Instead of taking personal attacks at me, he's talking about that article, because a lot of the shareholders read that and they go, well, they're saying you're the reason why the stock is tanking. So he's trying to blame Joe Biden.
And the problem is now that, you know, this phrase election interference, it's kind of having ramifications in other areas. Like, they've taken the blueprint of that they've used to describe these court cases, and now using it in this situation as well, you know, claiming that there is interference from Joe Biden. I mean, isn't it funny how they criticize Joe Biden, saying he can't walk and he can't talk, and yet he is the criminal mastermind behind all of these schemes? I mean, you know, none of it adds up. None of it makes sense. And it is further proof that, one, Donald Trump is a terrible businessman. You know, I mean, time and time again, these businesses have gone bankrupt. But this business looks like it's going to go bankrupt. And Devin Nunes just basically perjured himself and has given a whole video full of evidence to be used in a court of law.
Yeah, this makes him look pretty ridiculous, but he's taking a lot of heat. I don't know how long he's going to keep his job. But I do think that the plan is for him to be Trump's chief of staff. I absolutely believe that's really what he's doing, is hanging around, hoping for that to happen. And then they'll kind of bring in maybe a real CEO, you know, after Nunes goes. But you know, the bottom line is what Trump wants is absolute total loyalty to him. And that's what Devin Nunes is. That's how he chooses people. So Trump didn't go out and hire somebody who's qualified to run a tech company. He brought in a guy who spent his entire time in Congress sending out subpoenas, doing investigations of people, and suing people. So that's what Devin Nunes did. Nothing substantive. He was James Comer before James Comer was James Comer.
Yeah.
You know, and so you're taking a guy like James Comer and putting him in charge of a tech company.
And giving Trump everything that he wants to hear. In England, we call it brown nosing. I don't know if that's a phrase here in the US, but, you know, I'll leave it with you. I want to talk about Lara Trump now. She, of course, is now the co-chair of the RNC, and her announcement that not only does she have poll watchers, but she actually has ballot watchers. Let's take a look.
Now have the ability at the RNC not just to have poll watchers, people standing in polling locations, but people who can physically handle the ballots. We want people all across this country.
Can we do this? I want to hear, this is really fascinating to me. So
you
have 100,000 people who are they, I think I saw paid at one point, but whatever, irrelevant. But so they will be stationed inside polling places? I didn't even know you could do that. Tell us about it.
Yeah. So there was a moratorium for about 40 years on the RNC actually training people to work in these polling locations and the tabulation centers where the mail-in ballots come in. And last year, the judge who implemented that passed away. So that was lifted. And that gives us a great ability as we head into what I assume everyone understands is the most important election of our lifetime.
So it gives them license to interfere with the election. Sounds like what she's saying there. Just explain this, because, I mean, it's pretty serious, isn't it?
The only silver lining here is that I don't think that they're competent enough to carry this out in an effective way, especially not with this limited amount of time. This is something that you need to plan for years and put a lot of resources into. This is what she's talking about. You know, there's poll watchers and there's poll workers. Poll watchers, when she gives that 100,000 number, that's what she's talking about. These are volunteers. They're allowed to sort of stand outside a roped off area and watch people count ballots, but they're not allowed to get near any of the counting. What she's talking about is that the RNC used to have a program where they would recruit people to apply for jobs as election poll workers that are the ones that handle the ballots, count the ballots, process the ballots, etc. But what happened was they were cheating. It was an orchestrated attempt, a conspiracy to send in people who were cheating as poll workers. And so they had this court order, this moratorium for decades that said that the RNC was no longer allowed to recruit people and send them out to elections offices around the country. And she's right. The judge who put that in effect died. His successor did not continue to impose the order. So now the RNC is free to sort of revive this program. But the program, you know, what they have to do is recruit people and then get these people sort of, they have to train them what they want them to do. And then they have to get these people to apply as poll workers, get hired, and then go in there. So if they are going to try any shenanigans, I don't have a lot of confidence that they're going to be able to pull it off without getting caught, without being completely obvious, because these people are like the Keystone Cops when it comes to fraud.
It also reminds me of this Heritage Foundation plan to kind of infiltrate the federal government if Trump was to win, and to, you know, they're currently recruiting or have already recruited people to work, you know, to replace the deep state with the Trump state. And to train people up so that on day one they're ready to replace anybody who might be partisan against the Republicans to take these, you know, public service roles. I mean, this is, you know, it's like a mass recruitment, whether it be in these polling places or elsewhere, you know, in the federal government, to basically just police the whole thing with loyalists, right?
And poll workers are supposed to be non-political, non-partisan, volunteers from the community who have come forward to take these temporary 2 or 3 week jobs, sort of the same thing as like census workers do the same sort of thing. And for the political parties to get directly involved in training and instructing people who are going to handle and count ballots is beyond the pale. And especially this Republican Party who we see time and time again continues to have people arrested for trying to rig elections. Just this week, a candidate for Congress in Arizona was disqualified because he allegedly forged hundreds of signatures on his petitions to get on the ballot. Why did they think that? Because they were all identical signatures and they all appeared to match his signature, and they were one right after the other. So this is what they do. But I'm pretty confident that they're not going to be able to pull this off because they're not smart enough or sophisticated enough. And I don't think they have the money to really put the resources into it either.
I just want to remind people that the reason that Republicans are always coming up with these schemes is because they know that the more people that vote, the less chance they have of winning.
Correct.
Because the United States is, you know, it might not be a far left-leaning nation, but it is a thoughtful, progressive nation of people who are intelligent and, you know, capable of knowing the difference between right and wrong. And I mentioned Texas earlier, and in fact, Michael Popok did a very good hot take on it earlier today here on Midas Touch, talking about the Supreme Court, who are effectively going to allow Texas to not have mail-in ballots, and if you're under the age of 65, you have to show up at the polling place. I mean, it's this level of suppression. Of course, the Supreme Court is a political court now. It is stacked to the far right, courtesy of Donald Trump. That's really his kind of lasting legacy, isn't it? And you know, it's so sad that the nation is not represented in politics, because the people who call themselves Republican leadership, they have a completely different agenda to the regular conservatives, to the independents, and of course, to Democrats.
Sure. I mean, they lose the popular election every time. I think they've lost it 9 of the last 10 presidential elections. So this is how they have to win. They have to win it electoral college. They have to win it with voter suppression. And now they're trying to win it inside the elections offices when the ballots are counted. So, yeah, they're trying to rig things every way that they possibly can.
I feel another press conference coming on at Four Seasons Total Landscaping. I tell you, that's my biggest concern. Let's talk about Alina Paulina Luna. This is the motion to vacate the speaker that has been ongoing. Marjorie Taylor Greene behind it. And, you know, she's a big fan with the Russians now. We'll talk about that in a minute. But let me just show this clip first, discussing the Mike Johnson, the incumbent.
So I'm just going to tell him.
Yeah.
So I heard that if and when the motion to vacate is introduced, that there will be immediate resignations of a couple of more moderate members of Congress. And in the event that that happens, that ultimately means it does go to a Democrat speaker. And so we're in a predicament.
What a predicament, indeed. Explain this for us, Ron. It's quite complicated, isn't it?
Well, I don't think she's blowing smoke here, which is unusual for her. I think she is spilling some tea here, which is, what do we know? We know that 30, almost 40 Republicans are leaving. They're retiring. They've already announced they're not running for re-election. They're not on the ballot for re-election. And they're leaving at the end of the year. But and the reason why many of them are leaving is because they don't like these knuckleheads. They don't like these MAGA idiots running around like the three you see on the stairs and the stage there, Gates, Ogles, and Luna. And Green and the whole crew. These are people that are the more responsible Republicans in the House that are leaving. And what she's saying is they don't want to go through this motion to vacate speaker election again, especially not with a 2-3 seat majority. And so what she's saying is what she heard is that if Marjorie Taylor Greene calls for a vote on this motion to vacate and it passes, they will announce their resignation effective immediately. They will leave now and not stay till the end of the year. And I believe that she's telling the truth about that. I believe that there probably are a few that will just say, you know what? Most of the heavy legislation is already done for the year. Foreign aid, the budget, all of this stuff has already been passed. Impeachments are done. There's not a whole heck of a lot left for them to do. I think that they'll just say, we're out of here. And that would flip the House. And so I think that is why Marge is holding off on calling it up for a vote. Now, she has two co-sponsors, Massey and Gosar, which if those three vote on the motion to vacate and every Democrat joins them, it will happen. But I'm not so sure that every Democrat is going to join them. I think that there has a big reason why we have seen Mike Johnson become eminently more reasonable in the last few weeks is because my suspicion is he has received assurances from some Democrats that if a motion to vacate is brought, they'll vote against it. And I think that is, and as long as he did what he's done, passed the budget, passed the foreign aid. So as long as he continues to be somewhat reasonable, they will continue to let him be speaker and help him fend off these people from the far right.
I sometimes wish that the Democrats were more radical, though, you know, and instead of playing this, I mean, they call it bipartisanship, but, you know, when one side has stooped so low and doesn't play by the rules, it's very difficult to do that. But Joe Biden firmly believes in it. And, you know, the idea of maintaining that Republican speaker, despite his quite, you know, far right Christian nationalist views, it surprises me, but I can understand that there's a long game involved here.
I think that there's a lot of strategy here. They just got their whole legislative agenda through in the last few months. So that's what they were trying to do. So whatever handshake agreement they may have behind the scenes with him, I don't think it's necessarily going to last, you know, to the end of the year. But I think also the dysfunction they realize is going to help them in November. The dysfunction of the House, the clown show, is going to help Democrats at the ballot box in November. And I think deep down, maybe some of them secretly, don't necessarily want to take over right now. They want to kind of leave it the way it is and let the voters decide in November whether to keep these people in power.
We're going to take another quick break, but I want to come back and talk about Russian state TV celebrating Marjorie Taylor Greene, in fact, referring to her as demonstrably heterosexual. That's next. Do you remember cereal being one of the best parts of being a kid? Well, as I got older, I had to watch for sugar and empty carbs. Well, Magic Spoon has the amazing flavors you love, but high protein and less sugar. You can get the variety pack, four flavors, cocoa, fruity, frosted, and peanut butter. This pack has no grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and 4 to 5 grams of net carbs. And only 140 calories per serving. It's high protein, has no grams of sugar, keto-friendly, gluten-free, grain-free, and soy-free. Go to magicspoon.com/uncovered to grab a variety pack and try it today. And be sure to use the promo code UNCOVERED at checkout to save $5 off your order. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember, start your day off right with a delicious bowl of high-protein cereal at magicspoon.com/uncovered and use code UNCOVERED to save $5 off. Thank you, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring this episode. So Marjorie Taylor Greene is she's not making many friends in Congress at the moment. Not that she ever had that many in the first place. We mentioned last week how she was thrown out of the Freedom Caucus. She's kind of got her own caucus going on now. And this whole process to remove the speaker, just remind people where this came from and what it is about Mike Johnson that all of a sudden she really doesn't like.
Well, it, you know, a lot of it has to do with Ukraine, of course. And, you know, that's become a big thing for her. She used to talk about Ukraine from time to time back in the day, but she had so many other things on her plate that she was pushing crazy stuff. But she lately in the last few months, it's been all Ukraine all the time. It's been like her number one issue that she's obsessed with. She doesn't talk as much about the border or all these other issues as much, trans, woke. No, she's focused on Ukraine. And you know, in Russia, they used to make fun of her a lot in Russian media. They used to, because Russia is a very misogynist society. They don't view women as political leaders in any way. And they wouldn't make all these snide comments about her and make fun of her a year ago, 2 years ago. But with the last few months, she has been repeating almost word for word Putin propaganda on Ukraine. Every conspiracy that Putin has thrown out there, she's brought into Congress. She's drafted amendments to legislation that include Putin's conspiracy theories in it. So Russian media has come around, and now she's replaced Tucker Carlson as their darling that they love now. And they're pumping her up and praising her. So there was a really funny clip that Julia Davis found on Russian media this week about them talking about how beautiful and attractive she was. So that one was pretty funny.
Here it is.
Ну, конечно, моментально ее объявили российским агентом, и выходит статья с надписью «Нет».
Марджери Тейлор Грин, которую ты показал, красотка, один из немногих членов Конгресса США, который старается выглядеть как человек в старомодном смысле этого слова. Блондинка, ходит в белых пальто с меховым воротником. Демонстративно гетеросексуально.
It's a very compelling program, isn't it? It's interesting how they've picked up on her kind of, I know that white coat she wears with the fur collar, and almost looks like the kind of thing you would wear in a cold Russian climate. Maybe she's stockpiling her heavy coats with the fur lining so that when she relocates to St. Petersburg, she'll be more comfortable. What do you think?
You'll note that they are not praising her intellect or her wit or her legislative skills. As I said, it's a very misogynist country. they're talking about her looks and praising her for how and that she's heterosexual, because they're also very anti-gay in Russia. That's also a very big thing. And so, you know, they're praising her looks, that she's blonde, almost like they're saying she looks Russian in some ways.
Yeah.
And very heterosexual too, demonstrably, as we can tell. So it was just very funny. You would think, as a member of Congress, when you hear Russian media talk about you like that, that you would be mortified. But she hasn't commented on it, which is kind of funny.
Talking of anti-gay, Melania Trump has given a speech at the Log Cabin. It's the LGBTQ plus Republicans at Mar-a-Lago. I mean, if irony hadn't been invented yet, I could understand. Just explain, before I show the clip, just explain what this is all about.
So this is Rick Grenell's operation, who is, you know, Trump touted him as a gay member of his administration. That was like his token gay person that he brought in. Rick Grenell is one of the most obnoxious members of in Trump's orbit. Very abrasive. And I'll point out that a lot of people in MAGA can't stand Rick Grenell because he's gay. They don't like that. And they don't like the fact that he continues to hold these annual it's the Log Cabin Republican Club, which is the gay Republican group. He continues to hold these dinners every year at Mar-a-Lago. And that really annoys a lot of the MAGA people. So he brings in Melania Trump as the one who's going to be the headliner. And what was really shocking about this was when she did this event a couple years ago in 2021, she was the headliner. They gave her their Lincoln Award as a hero to the gay community. So they got her to show up. There was a pretty good turnout. There was probably, I'm going to say, like 200 people there. But this one, like, there was nobody there. And Grenell hyped this up as like this hugely historic event, that this is going to be a big momentum shift, that the gay community in America is going to rally behind Trump after this huge event at Mar-a-Lago. But here's what happened. Nobody showed up. There was probably like 20, 25 people there tops. And some of them were not gay. So you had Caitlyn Jenner was there. Dr. Oz was there. There were a handful of other people. It was just the usual regulars at Mar-a-Lago. There wasn't this big influx of gay people who showed up there to rally for Trump because of Melania. So really, it was kind of an embarrassing thing. They didn't put out any video. They didn't put out any photos. I was able to get one little brief video that you're going to see off someone's cell phone, and it didn't really pan the crowd. But you can kind of tell from the applause as she's coming in, yeah, there's 20, 25 people tops in this room.
Here it is.
So first of all, thank you all for coming. This is an incredible historic event that we're having here. And obviously, having the First Lady here just means so much to us. That, ladies and gentlemen, the former and next First Lady.
Introduction and beautiful words. Good evening. So great to see so many familiar faces here tonight. It is an honor and a privilege to be in your presence once again, surrounded by friends and allies who share the common goal of promoting equality for all.
Be best, Ron. Be best.
Grenell said, incredibly historic event. What is historic about that right there? And you know, Melania says, so nice to see so many familiar faces. That's because the people in that room are the people who are at Mar-a-Lago every day. Those are like the members of Mar-a-Lago who are there. This is, what is historic about this?
Well, clearly so historic that they didn't have time to turn off the music that was playing in the background. They had some kind of Spanish guitar playing, you know, as you would do if you're milling around. And then that was still going while he was making his speech. I mean, we showed a clip last week, or maybe it was the week before, about, you know, again, awards that she gets given that she doesn't even show up for. These kind of fake events to give the impression that there's some kind of sense of community and diversity, and nothing could be further from the truth.
Yeah, it's a, you know, the one that they had in 2021 was in the ballroom, the Mar-a-Lago ballroom, which is big. And this time they didn't even have it in the ballroom. They had it in this little side anteroom, which is very small. And you can see in the mirror behind Grinnell, you could see in the reflection, there's nobody in that room. It's very, and they had them all pushed up to the front. If they had had a lot of people there, they would have put out pictures, but they did not. They put out no pictures of this event. The only pictures they put out was a picture of Grinnell at the podium and a picture of Melania at the podium, and that is it. They did not show the crowd because there was no crowd.
Yeah.
So it's just hilarious that Grinnell is hyping this thing as some kind of groundbreaking, historic, earth-shattering event. Now the whole gay community is now going to rally behind Trump because of this.
Let me tell you something. No, they're not. Let's talk about Carrie Lake, because let's get the Vaseline out for the lens. And she's insisting, I think there's some kind of plot that Hillary Clinton is plotting to assassinate her. Let's listen to what she has to say.
In on that, and they have to try every other measure to try to control the government. And it's almost comical that Hillary Clinton is talking about Trump wanting to kill his opponents. I just want to say, as I'm speaking about this topic, I want everyone out there to know that my brakes on my car have recently been checked and they work. I'm not suicidal. And Hillary, I don't mean any harm to you. Please don't send your henchmen out to me. We understand what you're about.
I mean, there's just no limit, is there? Like, there's no lower limit to how low people will stoop when it comes to American politics. I mean, she's as mad as a box of frogs.
And she's told that she needed to reinvent herself. She ran in 2022 on all these conspiracy theories and thought that she was going to win in a landslide. In fact, was so confident that she told McCain Republicans in Arizona not to vote for her. I don't want your vote, like Trump is doing. We don't need your vote.
Yeah.
And they said, okay, we won't vote for you. And she lost.
Right.
So now her consultants, who aren't stupid, realize the mistake. And they're trying to present this kinder, gentler, new Carrie Lake, let bygones be bygones. But she continues in these interviews to revert back off her script to the old conspiracy Carrie, where she talks about the election being stolen. And now she brings up this conspiracy, which she did bring up once in 2022, that Hillary Clinton may be plotting to have her assassinated, may want to send a hitman, as if, you know, Hillary Clinton is concerned about or worried about Carrie Lake and what she's doing and is going to hire a hitman to go kill her. This is the kind of stuff that is going to cost her election, among other things, because voters don't want a kooky conspiracy theorist who thinks that Hillary Clinton is plotting to kill her. They don't want that in a U.S. senator. Arizona is not Alabama. The voters there are a little bit more educated, sophisticated. They have a lot of California transplants that live in Arizona that are very educated. And this kind of stuff just doesn't play.
When did it become okay to just say anything? I mean, that's the thing that, you know, concerns me, because obviously I cover, you know, politics around the world. And there, you know, it's only here where really politicians, you know, you want politicians to be people of the people. You don't want politicians to be the elite. You want regular people. But you still need to have a modicum of self-respect, respect for humanity, a moral compass, all of the things that make for a good politician, ideally. But I feel like here it's like anything now is fair game. Anyone is fair game, you know, and we look to the Lauren Boberts and the Marjorie Taylor Greens. And it's like, really? Like, this is like the worst job for you people. It's like you could have so much more fun doing other stuff. And yet those of us who commentate and journalists have had to pivot to cover people who not only just have no vocabulary or no intellect behind it, but will say anything for headlines.
Yeah, anything for traction. And the right-wing media doesn't do anything about it. They, no. You know, they're nodding along, going, laughing. You know, they're the ones who are supposed to be the gatekeepers to stop this stuff and say, yeah. Ho, ho, you know, we're not going to have you back on again after what you just said and apologize to their audience. But no, they're the enablers. Because that gets viewed. You know, when you say something like that, people watch your show. That's how you get ratings. But you know, I guess the good news is a lot of these crazy kooks continue to lose elections. Some of them get through and some of them win, you know, like your Boberts and your Greens, but a lot of them lose too.
Yes.
And so we'll see. I certainly hope she loses.
One of them, I should remind you, is running for president. So there's that to think about as well.
Well, that's where they get their cue.
Right. Yeah. Finally, let's talk about something very important that might overshadow all of these stories, and that is Celerygate. You can shed a little light on this story, and shall I play the clip first so we can see how it all started?
Sure, here sure, yeah.
I just think it's so good. It brings the moisture so it's not dry.
So what vegetables are we using? Celery?
Celery and carrots.
Celery and carrots.
But I love these. I had to go to two different places. Joseph's didn't have
the carrots. Chips. Oh, the carrot chips.
The chips. So I brought two sizes, the chips. And then there's these little ones I'll throw in there too.
This is Trump's lawyer, Alina Haber. Tell us what's going on here.
That's his lead counsel in his big fraud case in New York, right? Currently his chief legal spokesman. So, you know, Mar-a-Lago is really like a reality TV set. And when you think about it, I mean, Donald Trump was a reality TV show star with The Apprentice, right? The person who's filming that is Ziggy Flicker, who was on The Housewives of New Jersey, a reality TV show. And to them, they film everything. They film themselves driving in their cars. They film themselves walking around. They film themselves at the beach. They film themselves chopping celery and making briskets and cooking steaks. And that's why it's good for me, because I follow all these people on Instagram and all the people that are in and out of Mar-a-Lago, and they film everything and they photograph everything and they put it all out there. And so it's a treasure trove of content for me who's looking for things. And in this, that video was somewhat long, where she went through her whole brisket recipe about how she makes it.
Fascinating.
And I thought the first part, you know, because I'm a little amateur chef myself, and just watching her sawing that celery, you know, is not the way you're supposed to do it. And then she looks up and almost like slices her finger. She's got the big diamond rock on her finger while she's cooking. And then, you know, she's supposed to be making this gourmet meal, but she's got these pre-cut carrot chips that are like not even organic or nothing. You know, they were just in a bag carrots. So I thought it was kind of funny that they're putting out this cooking video where they're supposed to be bragging about what a good brisket maker they are. And, you know, so I kind of put it out because I knew Chef Twitter is out there. You know, we have all these different genres of Twitter users. And I know there's a lot of people who work in restaurants and who are chefs and restaurant owners who are out there who follow me. And of course, they jumped all over this and were critiquing it. But most of the comments were actually on what she was wearing, that they said that it looked like a bunch of pod holders that were knitted together into a top. I didn't really pick up on that until they commented on that. I was mostly focused on the celery, But the funny part is that Alina Haber didn't especially like this very much. And she posted a video, you know, responding and going after me, which I thought was very funny. And then she went on a podcast last night and was continuing to complain about me. So, I mean, it's all in good fun. I thought this was kind of a lighthearted moment in all of this craziness. But, you know, I think she, even though she was acting, she tried to sort of act like she wasn't upset. I think it's pretty clear she was upset by this.
Let's take a look at the response to your trolling of her horrific celery slicing.
Hey, guys. I've never done a video like this, so I thought I would try because Ron Filipowski is getting like a million views for me chopping celery. This is me eating avocado. Happy Passover, everybody. Hey, Ron, you little trollski. Well, I'm not good at this either. Oh, oops. Get a life!
Get a life, baby reindeer. This is...
I'm not the one putting out videos of myself cutting avocado as Trump's lawyer when, you know, your client's running for president of the United States and dealing with multiple lawsuits and you're making cooking videos, you know? So
I think it's so, just so interesting that, you know, they want to be taken seriously in court. They want to be taken seriously with all of these legal matters and everything. And then in the next breath, it's all a bit of a joke. And I think what you said earlier is very interesting, that really the show that would suit them is, you know, Housewives of Miami Beach or of West Palm Beach or something, you know, that rather than, you know, messing around with American politics and therefore with people's lives, that they would be just as happy being on these reality TV shows, suggestively eating avocado or slicing celery in a very criminal fashion, I would say, than actually getting involved in these kind of real world affairs. It's, you know, there's a lot at stake and democracy is at stake, and I don't think they're taking it very seriously.
Here's what I can tell you. When they did, a couple months ago, they did like a group photo of all of these regulars, and in fact in that group photo were some of the people that we saw at the Rick Grinnell's log cabin dinner. I recognize a few of them, and there was like six or seven of them, and they all looked the same. You know, they had the lip fillers and the augmentation surgery, multiple surgeries, and they were all done up in these costumes. And I captioned the photo "Housewives of Mar-a-Lago," you know, because after like the reality TV show, and actually they loved that. Yeah. They loved it. I actually got some feedback from them that they thought it was the coolest thing. And they started calling themselves that, the Housewives of Mar-a-Lago. So yeah, for them, this is like this strange, weird reality TV show. And you know who's missing out on the scene, unfortunately, for the next 2 months? Donald Trump, who unfortunately is stuck up in New York City at Trump Tower and missing out on the Housewives of Mar-a-Lago.
Lucky us. Okay. Thank you, Ron. All the best. If you want to download the audio podcast, you can do that tonight wherever you get yours. If you want to watch this show again, you can rewind as soon as we finish and have another go. Don't forget to share it, to comment, and check out our sponsors in the description below. I'm Anthony Davis. He's Ron Filipkowski. We shall return next week at the same time. Have a great week, Ron.
You too.